All right, we are recording. I'm Ethan Sharp, and today is December 15th, 2020. And I'm here with Jeffrey White. I'm here in Lexington, Kentucky. And Jeffrey, would you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Jeffrey White. I'm the executive director for the NEST Center for Women, Children, and Families.
Awesome, thank you. So to get us started, I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about the history of the Nest and the kind of services you provide there.
Yes, absolutely. So the Nest has been around for a very long time, since 1977. So we're over 40 plus years old. And the Nest came into being because we are located in the highest poverty area of Lexington in Duncan Park downtown. And a lot of the families in the area years ago would leave children with people they shouldn't leave them with because they couldn't afford childcare. So their aunts or uncles or friends or whoever it might be, while they went to work or ran errands or whatever it might be. So there was child abuse, there was neglect. All these things are happening to these little ones. So the Nest came into being. It was actually formed by Otto Cake, who was a professor at the University of Kentucky and a social worker. So they brought into existence the Nest, and we help children birth to age 5, and we provide totally free childcare. We're one of the only centers in Kentucky that does it absolutely for free. So we do both drop-in or drop-off care. So if someone goes to school part-time or has an errand to run, we'll watch little ones for 30 minutes, 4 hours all day, whatever the family needs. And again, there's no charge for that. We also get the children ready for kindergarten because a lot of the families couldn't afford preschool. So we would serve in that capacity, and we're actually a state licensed center, and we have a 4 out of 5 star rating. So we're very proud of that. And that's really how the Nest came into being. And from 1977 until today, our services have expanded to include the whole family. So we have a holistic approach to the family. Instead of just taking care of one person, we do the whole family. So we help children, women, and men. So we now have 4 programs, of course, one of those being childcare. Our second program is parent education and support. So we provide parenting classes for parents that need that education or have had their child removed from their custody. And this is one of the requirements to get their child or children back is to take parenting classes. So we offer those again at no charge for the community that we serve. We also do groups, support groups for these parents, because can you imagine having your child taken away from you? Obviously, there's a lot of emotions. And so we try to provide support groups to help these families to cope with the situation and to be successful. And getting their child back. We do that, one of the only centers that does it in Spanish, so we do it in English and Spanish. And actually, last year we helped over 500 parents in our parenting program.
Awesome.
And previously I talked about childcare. We helped over 200 children in our childcare program. Our third program is domestic violence counseling and intervention. So we do a lot of individual and group counseling for survivors of domestic violence. We're not a shelter. A lot of people think we're a shelter because we're in a house here in Duncan Park, but the shelter is actually Greenhouse 17, and we strongly partner with them. We just do outpatient counseling. We have licensed clinical social workers on staff that help counseling. And again, we do it in both English and Spanish. Also have alternative therapies for these survivors of domestic violence. So we do music therapy, art therapy, writing therapy. And the reason we do that is a lot of times survivors will come to us and they can't speak or they're not ready to talk about what's happened to them. So we try to think of ways to open them up and help them move on. And those alternative therapies have been very successful. Another component of our domestic violence program is we actually have legal advocacy for survivors. So we help them file their protective orders in the court system in 17 counties. We have a full-time attorney on staff that will help represent these survivors. And we have court advocates that speak both English and Spanish that, again, are there to help them during this legal process, because it can be very scary to have to go into the court system. So last year, our whole domestic violence program served over 2,000 survivors of domestic violence. So it's a very large program for us. And then finally, Ethan, our last program is called the Family Assistance Program. And this is for families that just have basic human needs. You know, a misconception of the Nest is we're helping all the homeless population, and that's not really our mission. We help the working poor. We're helping families that make $9, $10 an hour, and they have little ones, and they're just trying to get by in life. And we just try to provide basic needs for them. For example, mothers need diapers and formula and wipes and all kinds of things for those babies. And then toilet, soap, shampoo, deodorant, toothbrush, toothpaste, all these things we use every single day. And unfortunately, families that struggle, they have to decide what they're going to do without, because they just can't afford it. So we just try to help supplement those things. And again, the wonderful thing about the Nest is we try to partner with all the other nonprofits in this community. We don't want to duplicate a service. So we strongly with God's Pantry. We're not a food bank. That's God's Pantry.
Right.
Shelter, that's Greenhouse 17 and the Salvation Army and a few other places. So we truly, when someone walks through our door, they may use one of our services, but if they need financial assistance or they need resumes or they need to find work, we know other nonprofits to refer them to. So we're kind of a one-stop shop, if you will, for the community. And then family assistance, we help approximately 300 to 400 people a month. So it's our largest program. So last year, we helped over 5,000 individuals in all of our programming.
Okay. And are you the only organization in the area that provides legal advocacy for domestic violence?
There are some other legal aid of the grass, but again, all of our services are free, don't require you to use your insurance, or we just provide it to help the survivors. So
Okay. Oh, that's great. So would you be able to talk a little bit about your personal background and how you came to the Nest?
Oh, gosh, Ethan. All right. So this is a story. So most of my life I've spent in the banking industry, in financial and human resources. Those were my talents.
Okay.
And in 2009, I received a call from the executive director at the Nest at the time, Ginny Blackson, and Ginny asked me if I would help with some financial projections for the Nest and also to put together an employee handbook. Those, again, are things I could help with, and I said, sure, I'll help you out. So I came to the Nest. I met all the board members. I learned about their financial situation, and actually, when I was called in, the Nest was about to close. They actually closed their child care center in 2009 because they couldn't afford to pay the teachers. They just did not have the sustainability. So I worked together with the board to put together a strategic plan and how we can get to be where we want to be. And then Jenny up and left the Nest. She got a wonderful job at Berea College. So one of the directors came to me and said, Jeffrey, would you please be our executive director? Because you know all of us, you know what's going on here. And Ethan, I said, no, are you crazy? Because at the time, I knew what the executive director made, you know, and I was doing pretty well in this life. I said, but I'll help you until you find another executive director. So I talked to my boss. I was able to spend more time at the Nest. And of course, at that time, Ethan, I got to know the children over here. And that's kind of what hooked me in. To make a long story short, they did find another executive director to start. I was training them, and they only lasted 3 months because they said it was too much for them. So they came back to me again and said, Jeffrey, would you? And I said, I'll do it. So So I've been here 10 years now. It's changed my own life. It's changed my whole life. I'm so grateful. It's really put a lot of purpose in my life. So I just love it.
Yeah, that's a great story. So are you originally from Lexington then?
I'm from Corbin.
Okay.
Dutch fried chicken.
Yes, of course. So now I think we could talk a little bit about what the impact, you know, I think there's different things, a lot of those are different things that have happened in 2020, but I would like to talk about the impact of the pandemic on the organization itself, you know, beginning in February, March, and you know, what were some challenges and how did you deal with them?
Absolutely. So it certainly has been a very challenging year, obviously for everyone, but particularly our organization, since we serve so many people in need in the community. So first and foremost, the Nest never closed during COVID-19. We remained open because of the needs of the community. The only program that had to close per the governor was our child care center. So we did shut down per that mandate for a little bit until we can reopen again with the governor's orders. So that was the program that we had to shut down. The other thing that we had to figure out, Ethan, is how are we going to serve the masses of people that come here every single day without spreading COVID-19? You know, a lot of our clients, again, it really is an educational element. A lot of them didn't wear masks, obviously didn't have the PPE. So we actually added that to our arsenal for family assistance. So we started handing out hand sanitizer, masks, cleaning supplies, things that they could take back. And we tried to educate them on using these things. The other adaptation we had to make is all of our classes and our groups and our counseling. So we signed on to Zoom, like a lot of people have. Yeah. And I have to tell you, as the director, I was really worried, because we do serve the working poor, that people were not going to have the communication pieces. They're not going to have the data to do Zoom, which you have to have. And to my surprise, a lot of them did have it. So I would say 92% of our families were able to Zoom with us. Mm-hmm. And 8% that was not able to Zoom with us because they didn't have a device or they didn't have. We formed partnerships with Sprint, which is now T-Mobile, that would use phones and data plans as a donation. And that's how we were able to connect with the other 8%. So it has been miraculous. If there's anything good out of COVID-19, it's Zoom, because it is something that we will continue to do, because we found that actually our attendance rates were higher. We've had to add more groups because it was so popular. And again, I think it's because, you know, the clients didn't have to leave their home. They didn't have to try to travel and get to the Nest. So it really removed a lot of barriers that they were having. And it's proven to be the most positive tool for us. That was really, really miraculous for us. And of course, we still had to have our hands on with our family assistance, which is basic human need. So we basically served a lot of people from the outside. Of course, it's December now and things are changing a little bit. So we did not allow them into the building, and we had markers for them to stay 6 feet apart. And pretty much everybody complied with what we put into place. And of course, we had people go out and monitor and make sure they were wearing their masks, using hand sanitizer, and staying 6 feet apart. So that's worked really, really well. So we were able to adapt that way. And I do have to give a shout out to the community. A lot of people have helped us. I know Castle and Key helped us with hand sanitizer, which was just wonderful. I mean, they gave us 36 boxes. I mean, that was really, really helpful for us. But we had a lot of the churches step in and just donate so many things for people that just need basic human needs. So we've been very blessed this year. And those are just some of the ways that we've had to adapt during COVID-19.
Yeah. And the child care services, that was closed for a period of time, but then that reopened?
Yes.
When did that?
I believe that we reopened back in June. And that's when the governor said we could go ahead and open back. And actually, we've been helping because of COVID-19, because a lot of the child care centers have been closed. So a lot of people are using our respite or drop-in component because they had to go to work and they didn't have a place to take their child. So children under five, people would call the nest. So we were a really big help for people trying to go to work and were challenged with what do they do with their children.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know that some child care services were sort of given more leeway because of, you know, the need to provide childcare for essential workers. Were you one of those organizations, or
no? Well, we didn't go to that extent because the maximum children we can take in our center is 25.
Okay.
And so we're a smaller center. However, you know, obviously we were very cautious, and we had to break up the children in groups to make sure they don't interact with each other. And so there was several things that we had to do here, but our most immediate thing for this community was to help people because people had to work. So we really wanted to make sure that they were provided for.
Yeah. What about on the financial side? I know that a lot of organizations like the Living Arts and Science Center have really struggled through this period. Has that been an issue for you, or have you found the support that you needed?
Yes, that has been a huge struggle for us. The Nest, a lot of people still don't know about the Nest here, even in Central Kentucky. Everybody knows the larger organizations, but the Nest kind of falls under the radar because it is grassroots and it's 100% local and not affiliated with. So we usually do a lot of events to supplement our funding. So obviously we had to cancel almost all of those events. Our largest event, which is called A Night for the Nest, usually nets $100,000. Mm-hmm. And we did an online, like a lot of people, we try to do things virtually. Mm-hmm. And I believe we raised about $36,000. So we were already shy for that event. But altogether, we're getting close to the end of the year. I think we've lost about $250,000from not doing our normal events.
Yeah. And does that impact your personnel, or how do you make adjustments? I don't know if you can talk about that, but
yes, I can. So what's really wonderful and has been an awesome thing for the Nest is when I started again, really in 2010. We had a staff of 10. Our budget was $385,000 to run those four programs, and we were serving about 1,200 individuals at that time. So 2020, we have a staff of 25 now. We're serving over 5,000 individuals, and our budget is $1.56 million.
That's great.
I need to take some water, take a breath here. So it's been a really big challenge. So some of the areas that we were growing in, we've had to stop that growth. The other thing is the Nest is an old historic home, the old Morton House, and it has limited space. So before COVID hit, we were actually looking to try to expand because it's very hard serving 5,000 people in this building. So we were really looking, so that's put a big halt for us and a challenge, even though Zoom has actually kind of helped us because people are not coming back up, but we're still challenged with that. So we really had to put a halt and rethink our strategic plan because, again, Ethan, we don't know what's going to happen in 2021. We've got, you know, wonderful light at the end of the tunnel, as they say, with the vaccine. But we don't know how long this is going to last. We don't know again, even taking the vaccine, how long that lasts. So there's certainly some more challenges that we have, but financially, the nest has definitely been hurt by this pandemic.
Yeah. And you talked about how you've adjusted to using Zoom for therapy and for group sessions. What about for how's the pandemic impacted the legal advocacy work? Is the court meeting regularly? Is that continuing?
Yeah, so the courts, domestic violence court, still meets in person. So obviously they're all masked up, and they have been doing some Zoom with clients, but a lot of it is still in person.
Okay. So that's kind of just continued.
That's continued.
As usual. Okay. That's great. And what about in terms of the impact on the folks you serve? What are some of the impacts that you've seen with the pandemic?
Yeah. So obviously there's a lot of struggles going on in the community. We were one of the nonprofits selected to help with evictions. So we did receive some funding from LFUCG to help with clients that have been evicted because they lost their job due to COVID. So that's been a good thing to help with. But a lot of them, we've seen a lot of more mental anguish. And actually, domestic violence is really up for us. So I believe it really has had an impact on people's mental well-being. I think people are grateful for all of the nonprofits and people that are helping them. But just like all of us, it's affected all of us in some way. I have to tell you, even the staff, it's been very challenging. I'm kind of a positive person. I try to keep things upbeat as much as possible, but a lot of people are just regular people are just struggling with the isolation, with not being able to do the things that we want to do, right? I know we all know that. And it affects some people more than others. So we're seeing a lot of that with our clients. So we're trying to spend more time talking with them as best as possible and being safe and just trying to let them know that everything's going to be okay.
Yeah. Are there any particular stories that you could share either about your staff or folks you serve of challenges or ways they've dealt creatively, you know, with the situation?
So we just had another event that we actually had to modify. We have something every year, Ethan, called Reindeer Express.
Yeah.
Where we give children of all the families we serve of the nest a brand new coat, hat, scarf, gloves, toys, art supplies, and books, and a food box so they'll have a nice Christmas. This year we had over 950 children to provide for. The community donated a lot of things to us to help these children. And normally, what we would do is turn the nest into Santa's workshop, and the parents would come to the nest and shop for their child because they know if their child likes Frozen or dinosaurs or what. So we let them shop, plus it empowers them because they are actually picking out the items. We give them wrapping paper, and so the gifts are from them to their children. So obviously we couldn't do that this year because normally we have, for those 950 children, we'll have 350 families come through here. Well, we couldn't do that this year. So a shout out again to Crestwood Christian Church. They have huge space and they helped us. And what we did is we called the families ahead of time, asked what the child's favorite color was, asked what their interests were, and we pre-bagged everything. And they just came through like a drive-thru. Just think of a regular drive-thru, and we just handed them their bag. And so the good thing about that is that the children did have a Christmas this year, even during COVID. And I think the reason I wanted to share that story is a lot of families cried. They were just so grateful because obviously COVID has affected work for a lot of them, and they just wouldn't have been able to do it. So we were very glad that we could put on that event with the help from all the wonderful donors.
Yeah, that is a great story. And you mentioned the increase in domestic violence. I don't know if you have any statistics on that, or just sort of a general sense of what's going on there.
Yeah, just a general sense. I know Katie Mooney, who's our director, she would have statistics for you, but I
Okay.
can tell you that she comes to me almost every day. And not only is it up, but the stories are getting worse. The abuse is worse. For some reason, it's more horrific, and it has taken a toll on the staff because it's been so graphic. And but it definitely has affected survivors for sure.
Yeah. And how does your staff sort of deal with that, the stress of all of this? Are there, I guess, I don't know if you have any sort of support services that you provide internally.
Yes, so we have an EAP program. But the
Okay.
other thing I would say, as a team, we try to talk about it. We try to laugh as much as we can, because really that does help. And people do need to get it out and talk about what they're experiencing. So we have weekly staff meetings, and we will theme them and do fun things. And just to, again, everybody's not seeing everyone because we have limited the amount of physical staff that come to the Nest because of COVID. But when we're on our Zoom call, we try to make it as fun as possible and let people talk if they want to talk. It's been healing for a lot of people. And I actually did a end of the year survey, and a lot of people have liked the Zoom meetings. It's really helped them to cope with what's going on.
So is your staff working in the office, or are they mostly working from home, or is it?
It's a mixture. We have some staff members that are vulnerable. So they're 100% working from home, and they can do 100% of the responsibilities. So that's working out fine, actually. We rotate. We normally don't have more than 30% of the staff in the building at a time. Obviously, the childcare, we have to have the childcare, so they have to be there. But we do try to rotate the other programs. So it's a hybrid of working from home and coming in. Even myself, I'll work from my home office, and financial officer will come in when I'm not here to do the bookkeeping and all of those things.
And I haven't asked this of anyone before, so I'll ask you, how do you deal with the childcare services in terms of mitigating the spread of the pandemic? Do you take temperatures, those kinds of things?
Yes, we do all the CDC recommendations, and of course from our governor. And everybody, the parents don't come into the center, and we check temperatures of the parent and the child when they come to the door, but only the child will enter. Of course, children under 5 do not have to wear masks, but teachers do have to wear masks, so they're always up. And then again, we try to isolate the different groups in different rooms. So we usually would have them all come together for their meal. But we don't do that. Everybody eats in their own room. So we try to isolate as much as we can of the children interacting.
That was just something I was curious about. I don't have any small children right now, so I was curious how that worked. So I think, unless you have another story you'd like to share, well, there's one other topic I did want to address before we do that, and that is the Black Lives Matter protests and the racial reckoning that has occurred. And I was wondering how your organization has dealt with that and how that has affected
Yes.
the people you work with.
So we have a very diverse group of employees. We have obviously the African American population, we have Latino, we have LGBTQ. So we have a lot of different diverse groups here. And one of the ways that we've helped with that is we have network resource groups that get together and we talk about these issues because it's been painful for a lot of people. And it's important to talk about it. It's in one of the things we did is in our employee handbook, we've added, which we didn't have before, anti-racism statement. So we're trying to do what we can as an organization to make sure that everybody feels welcome and accepted, as well as our clients. So it's important that we talk about these issues and what's going on, and not just kind of ignore it. And yeah, we've been doing it. And out of the discussions, it's been phenomenal because people have come up with a lot of great suggestions. And just like it changing and adding to our employee handbook, I just love it. I'm so glad all these groups are going on.
Yeah. So you have groups for different sort of interest groups, ethnic groups. Okay. Okay. And piggying back on, just adding to that, could you talk a little bit about the history of your work with the Spanish speaking community? Because that is something that's unique to your organization. How did that get started?
Yes, absolutely. So we used to use translators, Ethan, Language Line, and a few other resources. And we found that it really did not connect with the person. It's very, even though it's helpful for at least knowing exactly generally what's going on, you could tell with the client that they couldn't quite relate with this interpreter. So we decided, because that group was growing in requests for Nest services in all of our areas. So we decided to make sure that we had bilingual staff members. So that's one of the initiatives that we did, and being strategic. So we have bilingual counselors, we have a bilingual teacher, we have bilingual parenting instructors for both men and women. Mm-hmm. So it's been really, really helpful for the Spanish community. And now I'm happy to say, in our family assistance program, we have a bilingual family service coordinator, and this has made a huge difference. We're seeing more and more of Spanish-speaking individuals come to the Nest because of Adam, is our coordinator, and he is really, truly awesome, and it really has really grown the numbers for sure.
That's great.
Yeah.
That is just sort of a change in the population that you deal with over time, and that's good that you're adapting as our population changes and grows.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to sort of move toward talking about how you see things. You already mentioned, you know, what some of the challenges going forward, but you know, what do you see for next year? How do you see the Nest coming out of this, and how do you see the folks you're working with, that you work with, coming out of this?
Yeah. So one of the things that that I've tried to think about thoughtfully to change is our weekly meetings. Normally it's check-ins, and because so much happens in the Nest in a week, it's important that we all catch up on what's happening with families. However, I thought it would be really helpful to maybe these weekly meetings, we make one health and wellness, we make one an educational meeting, obviously a check-in meeting, but just trying to really be thoughtful about the staff to help them. And I think that's one of the things that's really going to help them in 2021. We definitely will, Ethan, do more events again. So you're going to see a lot of events coming out of the Nest because we have to make up for that financial shortfall. And I think more than ever, we have a wonderful board of directors. We currently have 28 board members, and they have just been awesome during this whole period, and very helpful and supportive, and just calling on them a little bit more. They will have to give of themselves a little bit more in 2021 to really keep us on track and to really keep going forward with our strategic plan.
Yeah, yeah. So you foresee a brighter a brighter year, and a stronger Nest.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, is there anything else that you would like to add for posterity or anything that we forgot to cover?
Well, I would just say, you know, I grew up in Corbin, as I said, really not much money. I really didn't, you know, my family didn't give to nonprofits. We didn't really know about that world, if you will, because we were kind of in the poor area. But I will say that whatever speaks to anyone's heart, they should give to. Nonprofits are invaluable in this life in helping the community. You know, we make up the shortfall of what city, state, and federal can't do. So it's really important. I don't care what speaks to your heart, but that you support a nonprofit, because it's really helping to help people in this life. So,
yeah. Okay. I think that's a good place to end. Thank you so much, Jeffrey, for your time. And I will follow up with you by email.
Thank you, Ethan. Thank you so much.
All right.
Take care. Bye.